I believe that whole fund stack can be a really good alternative to static IP. That way, for example, you want to access your camera from anywhere. You don't really need a static IP. You don't need to pay for that. You don't need to take all those security risks. All you need to do is boot up wholesale or a similar service built on hole punch. You connect peer-to-peer directly to your computer, only to that specific port. That's it. You are connected to it. There are no middlemen. And nothing is exposed to the public.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to The Pair Report. This is the second episode, and I want to talk today. I've got a fantastic guest on the show, and his username is Super Sue, and I just kind of bumped into him throughout the development conversations and everything that's happening in a bunch of the groups on Keet. And I wanted to get him on because of the project that he is building. He and two other people, or a small team, are working on, and that I have already started using, which is one of the best and simplest use cases for the Pair runtime, the Pair stack, in my opinion, that I think is wildly underutilized or not properly realize the scope of usefulness that it truly is. I mean, do you want to be able to host AI on your home machine and then connect to it remotely so that you can use it on your laptop or any other device? There's a lot of great AI tools, the image generation stuff. I mean, any service. I mean, do you want a tail scale that actually works peer-to-peer and doesn't require you to log in with your GitHub account and doesn't have a central server to establish that connection? That is the minimum viable product and the idea behind wholesale. So we struck up a conversation and made our own little room, and I kept watching this project and have been trying to keep up with what he's been up to. And actually, by the time this is published, the desktop app, this is a command line tool right now, and it's so easy to use despite the fact that it's a terminal application, but the desktop app might actually be released, regardless of whether it is or is not, because I know it's very soon. The link will be in the show notes. The show is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin, which is the place to buy Bitcoin, to plug your life into a Bitcoin standard, and even to get it in your retirement, you name it. Like, they have a full financial suite of Bitcoin-related services. And then the Cold Card hardware wallet by CoinKite, along with their plethora of really awesome and incredible security devices. If you want to know how to keep your Bitcoin safe, go to coinkite.com. Check out the Cold Card. The link, details, and discount code, Bitcoin Audible, will all be right in the show notes. But with that, let's go ahead and get into our chat, our conversation, the second episode of the Pair Report with Super Sue, discussing the connection of everything peer-to-peer. All right, well, I want to say this is actually going to be our second episode of The Pair Report, which is a new series that we are doing for, it's part of Bitcoin Audible, but it's also just kind of like a generic new Guy Swan-based show, I guess. I don't know what else you call it. I've been meaning and wanting to just kind of like dive headfirst into all the Pair stuff, and I feel like there's a need to pay a lot more attention to what's going on there. And I think it's the most under-talked about versus important development that's happening kind of in the Bitcoin space, the decentralized internet space, I think. But essentially where I think things are headed.
The peer-to-peer space.
Yeah. The peer-to-peer space. And I think it's really underappreciated. So the whole point of this is to bring more attention to it. And it's exciting. I feel like there's been a lot of momentum recently, like it's starting to build, you know, like the Pair development room has a bit of activity. Like with a year ago, there was very, very little happening. You know, it was just waiting for updates from Macintosh or Paolo or somebody to see if something was happening. But on that, obviously I came across you and your project, and which is called Wholesale, but I don't want to lead too much into that. I actually just want to start with, can you introduce yourself both to the audience, but then also just kind of to me, like what's your background? What got you into peer-to-peer stuff? And, you know, who are you?
Okay, so my name is Suryang Singh, and I'm the founder of Wholesale.io. It is basically a peer-to-peer based reverse tunneling software. Talking about my background, I'm actually doing my college in artificial intelligence and really got interested into networking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got interested into networking and peer-to-peer space. What brought me into peer-to-peer space is a friend of mine. He has been actually working on and actively using a hole punch and the whole tech stack for the past 2 years.
Really?
Yeah. He runs a service called Discord Linux, DLinux, which basically allows you to run Linux servers right through your Discord account. So basically, you are a student using Discord for communication, but you can also create a community, a space where you are co-learning with other people and you are learning about Linux. So they provide you a VPS. Now, how they introduced me to peer-to-peer and how they are using Holepunch is that in early days of DLinux, they were actually hosting from their home. So security was an issue for them.
Okay.
Like if they start giving up servers from their home computer, their whole network will be exposed. Their local network will be exposed and they would have an issue with that. So they used the Holepunch ecosystem to build a similar tunneling software to us. Basically, it was more of a DNS and tunneling software that allows you to use their system peer-to-peer based instead of directly connecting. For security purposes, they were using Holepunch because they doesn't have to give access to their whole network. They can basically choose a single port, a single service that they want to expose. In their case, it is SSH. So they basically set up Holepunch and gave access to everyone in the server. Anyone who creates an account creates a service with Holepunch that links their own computer and their server together, end-to-end encrypted. This makes sure that their own internet, their home network, is not out there on the internet public to be attacked by anyone. However, people are still able to access their computer.
Yeah.
So that's a really cool project, and it's still running. They are still using this service.
That's awesome.
For Minecraft hosting.
Yeah. That's crazy. You know, I don't think I did in a very general sense and still do, but I don't think I quite thought about how much of a security difference it is to try to expose a service manually versus doing it the traditional route behind your home network versus doing it with Holepunch. And I don't think I had quite realized that the security model is that different because you necessarily have to just kind of expose the network to the entirety of internet traffic rather than something that's exclusively based on a key. That's interesting. That's really interesting. I had not considered that. Like, I mean, aside from the normal things of just like end-to-end encrypted and, you know, the general benefits of the peer-to-peer architecture. But that's really interesting.
Personally, I think the security aspect is the biggest thing I expect from Holepunch.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, when you are exposing something, you are exposing only a single port or only the single applications that is listening on that specific port to mm-hmm. the internet. Your whole internet is, your whole home connection is not out there for someone to access or to attack on. For example, a lot of people here use static IPs to access their cameras. People who don't mm-hmm. use Ring because they are not available everywhere, but static IPs are available everywhere. I believe that Holepunch stack can be a really good alternative to static IPs.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
That way, for example, you want to access your camera from anywhere. You don't really need a static IP. You don't need to pay for that. You don't need to take all those security risks. All you need to do is boot up wholesale or a similar service built on Holepunch. You connect peer-to-peer directly to your computer, only to that specific port. That's it.
That's,
you are connected to it. There are no middlemen, and nothing is exposed to the public.
Man, the security, the fact that there's the tech itself, just how it works, is in addition to a significant security increase and then a drastic simplification of the very notion of offering a service or establishing easy communication between two devices, just the user experience of it. It's like, I'm very familiar with the terminal, right? Like I have a sysadmin cert and I've done a ton of different stuff around that. So like, I don't have a problem booting up a terminal and doing something, running a script, doing that sort of thing. However, I still fully recognize and know that if I'm asking someone else to do it, I've eliminated my ability to talk to normies. You know, like I know that I've exited 99.9% of the potential users from the realm of the discussion because I'm asking them to type in a command or something. And the thing that, and actually let's just go ahead and get into wholesale, because it's just made me realize how easy that user experience can truly be. And for the difficulty that I've had over my life in trying to get a file from literally this machine that is sitting right in front of me and this machine that is sitting right next to me, I cannot tell you how big of a pain in my ass that has been over the course of my life. It's not, it should not be hard. It should not be hard. And I feel like I'm finally, as someone who is just kind of dove headfirst into all the peer-to-peer stuff and has always followed this, I feel like we're finally on the cusp of breaking through that barrier and making it easy and quote-unquote non-custodial. You know what I mean? Like that we are actually in charge of it and we're the one issuing and creating the connection and sending the files. So on that note, why don't you tell me about what wholesale is? After the spiel on wholesale, did you guys use Pear Runtime when it launched, or you were actually building this previously with Holepunch because you had a friend who was using Holepunch, I assume?
Initially, we were building with Holepunch.
Uh-huh.
But when we saw that Pear Runtime is being launched, we started building on Pear Runtime. The Pear Runtime application we are building is only for the GUI part. The graphical user interface.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, cool.
The terminal
cool.
one is still just basically HyperDHT, Holepunch, and a bunch of other Holepunch tech meshed together.
Okay, gotcha. Give me the pitch for wholesale. Like how you see it.
Okay, so how I see is wholesale is basically a lot of time. I believe the internet should be the way it was meant to be, which is peer-to-peer. I should be able to connect to you. You told me that how pain in ass it is to get one file from here to another device.
Yeah.
It is, right? It really is a pain. However, with wholesale, you can solve these issues. One computer can act as a server, and many other computers can act as a client, and they can transfer anything between them. It can be plain text. It can be anything that runs over TCP. You can send files. You can send data. You can play Minecraft. You can expose your web servers and a bunch of other cool things.
Mm-hmm.
Wholesale is a peer-to-peer based alternative, you can say, of Ngrok plus Cloudflare combined. These are the two leading services for creating network tunnels. They are both centralized, offer some limited functionality over wholesale, and requires you to go into the terminal where we cut off 99% of people. Right.
Also, for anybody who's listening, I'll have the link in the show notes, but it's actually spelled HOLESAIL. So it's not wholesale like I'm selling products wholesale. Like wholesale as in there's a hole and there is a sail on my sailboat. So when I was first inclined, like this was the original thing that got me thinking. In fact, I came very, very close to just trying to throw money at someone else to build this. If we had been talking, I probably would have already been working with you on this like a year ago. But this was Tailscale was such a interesting tool to me. And I learned it from the Linux Action Show guys, the guys who do self-hosted. And they're all about like, you know, how can I build stuff out myself and how do I self-host it on my home machine and connect to it? And as many clever ways as they have for figuring stuff out and like really cool tools. And I've learned Tailscale. I'd heard vaguely the name, but I didn't really know much about it. And I used it for quite a few different things in this sort of a context. But it always bothered the shit out of me that I had to like log in with my GitHub account. And that clearly there's a service here connecting me. And if they go down or I can't log into my GitHub or something, I lose all of my control over this. And it did not feel like a real solution to me. It felt like just another service that was filling in a gap for what was fundamentally a networking problem. And when I experienced Holepunch and the pair stack is what I've been calling it, the pair stack, for the first time, I immediately saw like, oh my God, you could build the Tailscale equivalent. Now, after we talked, and I also talked with Hope, one of the developers I'm working with, Tailscale has this insane list of features. Like, it's just like a huge multi, it's a Swiss Army knife of stuff. But only in the context that I was using it essentially the exact same way that I use Wholesale. Is I was just trying to get it to establish a connection between two devices so I could try to direct or make some sort of a connection for another service. I wanted to ask you, first off, is this, in your mind, is this going kind of the Tailscale route? Are you trying to push for a like fully featured, more of a networking tool? Are you trying to go for the kind of user facing, like, hide all of that in the background, and we're just creating a quick way to connect to applications? I'm curious because I haven't seen the GUI you were talking about yet, which I'm very interested in. But I want to get like, what direction are you trying to take the project more specifically?
I want to take it to user facing direction, basically to put it in words. Mm-hmm. I want it such a way that there are two people, you and me, mm-hmm. and we can be on the same local network. That is basically putting in the word. For example, yesterday I was playing Minecraft with my friend without creating a server at all using Wholesale. What we did, basically, we opened Minecraft, created a open my world to LAN, and he joined using Wholesale. So it was simple as that. I want to access a camera from anywhere in the world. I can run Wholesale on the same server that the camera is streaming to. And then I can access that specific server from anywhere. So this is the user case, like the common people, they should be able to use this tool. I am building it for the developers as well. Most of our source code is open source. All nice. The tools are there. Mm-hmm. However, the direction we want to take is the user-facing direction. For example, I need to send you files. Right, I need to send you files. I want to play games or LAN Wi-Fi. I want to access cameras. I want to call you. So for tooling like this, when there is no server required, Wholesale is the solution.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Dude, I tell you, for a terminal tool, as much as, like, I always get, like, really excited and then try to sober up when I'm like, okay, well, let me just use this thing. Let me see what the kinks are and, you know, how difficult is this going to be to do? And it's funny that you're actually in artificial intelligence, that's like the direction you said you're going in school. Did I hear that right?
In the college. Yes.
Yeah, in the college. Right. And I find that interesting because that was the first thing I was trying to use it for is there's a service called Pinocchio. And I actually mentioned this on the last episode of AI Unchained. Actually, I was telling everybody about my setup with Wholesale. It's a service called Pinocchio that basically allows easy packaging of things. It's kind of like Docker for AI tools, in a sense, is that you can easily install stuff inside of Pinocchio, and they make little packages inside of Pinocchio to just go to like a marketplace, so that rather than needing it specific to your machine, you know, you're creating your little Docker instances and then running them inside their little thing. So it's very controlled. You know, when something isn't properly installed, like it just does it in the package. Very easy control and no compatibility issues, or very few in the context of how fast most of this shit is moving. And the very first thing, so when I have used my AI from my MacBook here, and I've used it from my Linux machine before, on the local network, I have just the normal service, right? I just do the normal thing with the IP address and the port. Then when I am off of my local network, I have to use Rust Desk, and which is just a remote desktop app. And it works okay, but it's incredibly laggy. I've had just constant frustrations with that sort of thing, and Tailscale was clearly had numerous trade-offs to the fact that it was actually working. And then, so while I was connecting to this thing, I would do Rust Desk when I was away from my machine. And so I was like, all right, I need to, because I've been interested in wholesale for already like a week. And I think that was when I came back and I was like, wait, can I do this? And you were like, yeah, that's literally what it's made for. And I was, so I immediately went back. I was like, okay, let me freaking do this. Let me actually install and use this thing. And I was shocked by, even at the terminal stage, like the fact that this is still a terminal tool, how unbelievably easy and how few pieces of the puzzle there were to do. Like I literally typed in wholesale, what was it, like key or
desk live, desk key.
Yes, live, yeah.
There are a bunch of parameters.
Yeah. And just, which shockingly, I didn't use like a connector or anything like that. I used just the basic parameter thing, like essentially the shortest path that was in the help document. So it was like, you know, a wholesale live and then generate a key. And then I took that same thing and I pasted it into the machine, and then it was literally just working. Like it connected instantly, and I brought it up in my browser, and it was the fastest and most responsive connection I had ever had doing exactly that. And I was now doing this over wholesale. And then we were on the way to BitBlock Boom. And so I was like trying to show my brother, I was like, no, dude, seriously, like this just works this easy. Like you could stick a GUI on top of this, a GUI on top of this thing, and make this a click on and it runs sort of thing. Like there's no way that's not possible. And, we were at the airport on like shitty airport service. I could not get Rust Desk to do anything. I just wanted to compare to see like, you know, what I was up against as far as the peer-to-peer version versus the traditional like big company or like the more established solution to the thing, to the problem. And I could not get Rust Desk to do anything. And I had a VPN, so it could have been that the VPN got in my way or something. Like I just couldn't get it to connect. But generally, when I do get it to connect, it's sluggish just because there's enormous amounts of data being transferred that's not necessary to the program. You know, it's just because I have to send my whole desktop in HD video to the computer. And then I was like, all right, and now let's do this over wholesale. And I just typed in the port number, you know, because I was already connected. That was the other funny thing, is I'd connected at home and then taken my stuff, you know, closed everything up, opened it right back, and everything was still running. Like I'd been running for like days. They'd been connected without any interruption in the stream. I just kind of saved it as a bookmark, literally, just in my browser. And I immediately brought it up. Didn't have to do anything. That's the other crazy thing. It's like Rust Desk, I was like trying to connect and do all this stuff. This was already established and already working. And I swear to God, it was like running localhost. It was like I was running it on my own machine, or I had perfect access to a web server that was just up and running. I had great internet. And I didn't have any of those things. And it's running off my local machine. And so we just, for the fun of it, just generated a bunch of stupid pictures while we were sitting at the airport waiting for the plane. I think I did a bunch of stuff of like Trump with like a long wig in like the colonial war, some like really dumb images, but we were having a blast. And it was just so cool that this service that is so insanely difficult to provide in any other context was easy to the point that I didn't have to do anything after the initial setup. So not only was the initial setup easy, but I'm like shutting this stuff down and picking up and taking it places. And, you know, the computer's going to sleep and I open it back up and everything's still just right there. Just honest to God, it just kind of blew my mind that we have not had this and we have a tool that makes it so easy. So I guess I'm just saying that's a long way of saying kudos, because it's very, very difficult to make me feel like the user experience is such that this is actually going to blow up and be wildly useful. And it seems like a no-brainer to me that this will be. And especially if you're building a GUI, and I will do everything I can to tell everybody about it. When I get excited about something, I tend to not shut up at all about it for months and months. So you've got a cheerleader at least.
Thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you like it and using exactly what it's meant for.
Yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah. Or I've already got multiple services now, like Pinocchio or whatever. Like it gives you an option on a lot of those different services to host them localhost. And so it's just like, I have a whole series of them now and I just use them regularly from my MacBook. And it's just like, they're there. I am stoked. So did you say, did I hear correctly, that you have an example of the GUI and what you're planning on doing with that? Do you want to share that publicly, or is that just like, I don't want to.
I can share it publicly.
Okay, sweet. Yes, I want to see this. I'm very, very curious. There we go. Sweet.
Okay, so this is what the initial GUI looks like.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. So those are all just separate services that you can cut on. So you've got them on right now? Or are those off right now?
Yeah, they are under development, actually.
Okay.
I'll tell you about this debugger features. Mm-hmm. This is a really cool feature. And you can play Minecraft or even SSH into your server securely.
Nice.
Yeah, there are bots DDoSing yours. Not DDoSing, basically trying to track your passwords all the time on SSH servers.
Mm-hmm.
So you can securely expose them with wholesale data.
That's so cool.
And on the right side, you have a list of all the servers currently running or closed.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work yet. The dashboard doesn't work, but the connection does, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, for example, like go here, I am connecting to someone else, type a name, I will call it. I give it a local address,
mm-hmm.
Can be local host or anything that your own computer is able to resolve to, I give it a port, and I can give it a key. Let me. Currently, the key needs to be the one from your server. It needs to be 64 character long. But
okay.
Soon enough, the key wouldn't be like this. It will be anything you decide.
Mm-hmm.
This is my key. It is already supported in the wholesale app, actually.
Okay.
So I click on add and hold on. Okay, it's still under development. I think I just encountered a new bug.
Gotcha. Now I'm curious. So this was if you were establishing a new connection with someone else. I'm connecting to someone else. Okay. And then the other one is if you're sharing to connect to somebody else. Okay. With this, out of curiosity, how difficult and or have you even started tackling being able to do this on mobile yet?
I have actually started being able to do this on mobile. The issue with mobile is that the Expo app is, we are not able to compile it for React Native yet. But
Oh,
I talked
okay.
to the whole Punch team and they told me that they are working on a new module that will be replacement of the Node.js Net module. When that is completed, we will be able it to compile it for React Native with Bear, and it will actually run on mobile soon
Sweet.
as the Net module is ready. And when the Net module is ready, actually our peer application will be much better, because right now we have to work with Electron and Pierre to make it work,
Yeah. That's
because their
awesome though.
specific module is missing.
Because being able to do this on mobile, if I could break out my phone and talk to do like my LLM chat, you know, like with Mixtral or whatever on my Linux machine, or generate images or do whatever, like run my workflow like with Whisper and doing transcription. Like if I could make those connections to my phone, like that would be next level. Like that would be a huge, huge deal, because what it enables is the ability to, if that can be managed easily, it enables the ability to essentially offload computation to the point that, like, I no longer have limitations on my phone about what my phone can do. And now, one thing I will ask, and I assume this is probably in the line for thinking about mobile. But do you have a custom string and or camera access to put this into a QR code setup? Because as far as like this is perfect for somebody who's in the technical space, you know, like who needs a, you know, key, string, address, like all that's pretty simple if you have the basic networking understanding. Like none of that's unfamiliar. But I know to the normie person, they're going to be asking a question about what each of those pieces are when they go through the process. And so I'm imagining like what's the easiest way to obscure that, to basically put a layer in front of that, either with a address type, kind of like how Pear does, is you have Pear colon slash slash and then the key, or by simply having it all based in a QR code format. It's just like it's the address, it's the port number, it's the key, it's the connector, you know, whatever pieces of the data need to be, so that you can literally just scan a QR on your phone or even on your MacBook to connect, and it simply fills in all of that information.
Okay, so initially what we have is we can put in a custom key here. Like I can call it my new hello world. When they'll put this single key on their mobile or somewhere else, they'll be connected to this PC. But come to think of it, this is actually a great idea. I can modify it to produce a QR code that can be shared across files. So for example, I'm a tech person. I want them to connect to me, or I myself want to connect to them. I can share a QR code with them that will have all the details, including the local address, the connection name, secret key, and the local port. For somebody who is not so much into tech, just need to scan the QR code or load the QR code file, and they will be able to connect to it. I think that's a really good idea. Thank you for that.
For sure.
So
Because
that's a good idea.
that would immediately open it up to so many people who have no idea what they're actually looking at. And the other thing is, this would be difficult to do in the UI to explain to a non-technical user, but you could do it. You could do it. It might be either a visual thing or a naming thing of like, you know, admin access or share a service or something, and you know, maybe give a warning. It's like you're giving too much access to somebody. Make sure this is a peer, not one of your other devices. Or excuse me, this is your device, not a peer. But the other thing I was thinking is abstracting away the layer. So you're actually doing a base connection. So let's use the example of I have my phone and my laptop, and I have six services running on my laptop. Now, if I am connecting to you and I'm like, okay, well, I want to show you this one service that I have, or I want you to, you know, generate some AI and we're going to test something, right? And so, like, I give you the connection details for the third one down. And then you connect with the QR code, or I send you the string and the key and all that stuff. Either or. Now, if it's my phone, rather than sharing individual services to my phone, is there a way, and or is this something that you have thought about connecting them as if they're like the same ID, connecting that at a layer below, where we're sharing some sort of a, let's say, a hole punch log. You know, we have one of these ledgers that's just keeping track of literally all of the connections we could have. And so my phone propagates the exact same list of services that my computer is hosting. And then on my phone, I can just select them. And so it's kind of like an admin level access to the services, where I can just see any and all services running, or I can select an individual service and allow someone else to connect to it specifically, or I could just give access to my phone for only this one thing. That's something from the context of a user is like I would be fishing for very, very deeply and would be willing to throw sats at for bounties and all that good stuff. But was that in part of the plan for extending this out and making this more broadly or useful at multiple levels, or were you thinking more targeted services?
It's basically like having a single account across multiple devices.
Yeah.
So you can sync your all the log. Yeah. Now we do not have a plan to implement this, or we actually intend to keep each and every computer separate. Your mobile, your computer. They appear to wholesale as a separate service.
Okay.
At the moment.
Gotcha.
But in the future, we might add this.
You said it's possible, basically, in how you do it?
Yeah, it's possible. For example, Kit just shifted to new IDs.
This episode is brought to you by the Cold Card Hardware Wallet. This is an ultra-secure device. This is a hardware wallet that signs all of your Bitcoin transactions so that your keys stay on this device. They never leave this device. They are securely held, and you can't even get into this device. You can set up a BrickMe pin. You can set up a duress pin with a dummy wallet. There are so many. This thing is built with the absolute top-notch security in mind. It has a verifiable source code. It is Bitcoin only. It can be air-gapped from start to finish. And my favorite, you can set it up with NFC tap. Where it is? Where is my phone? So you can tap right on your phone. And you can transfer the transaction, you can sign it, and then send it right back to your wallet. And you can use a wallet interface on your phone that is super easy, super simple, and still incredibly secure. Your keys never leave this device. They're never on your phone. And if you want 150,000 sats, and you've been watching this show, you'll know what I'm about to do. Word number 8 is apart. Word number 12 is spend. And word number 4 is resource. Maybe you should write those down, and maybe there's 150,000 sats behind them. And maybe you should keep watching the show and keep an ear out for the rest of those seed words, because there's 150,000 sats waiting for somebody. You can get your Cold Card with a discount code Bitcoin Audible. The details and the links will be right in the show notes. Maybe you'll get 150,000 sats to go with it. I don't know. I write down some words.
Like I know I would probably use it, but it might be something that you have to respond to the user, like see how they start utilizing the tool and like where the direction that they go in to see whether or not it makes sense. But it's a very interesting idea, and the fact that it would actually be relatively easy to implement that, just at like, you know, one additional layer of, you know, access. That rather than sharing some specific service, you're sharing the data for all of the services, and that you can pick and choose which service you want to use. The number of things that you can do when you solve the connection problem, when you just make it an easy way to connect, feed a service, establish communication between two devices easily and by themselves, like sovereignly in a sense, you know? It's just incredible. Like I'm constantly using this thing, and it's still a very early tool, you know, like it's a, it, like, I don't like to run a MacBook. As much as this thing is a phenomenal tool, because I've got like a maxed out M chip, you know, so it's great and it does run LLMs and stuff like that, but it obliterates the battery to run an LLM or do image generation. Like, I can watch the percentage tick down if I'm generating a lot of images. It's just like 83, 82, 81. I'm generating like 16 images or something. But that's the beauty of like wholesale, is if I can easily connect to the point that I just don't have, like, the level of frustration is just like non-existent. Like, even if I specifically disconnect, I just go to my terminal, I hit up and enter, and I'm right back connected. Everything's running right where it was. And holy crap, I'm able to use four or five different AI tools that I use in my processes. To use the transcription tool the script that I built for my podcasting stuff. I mean, just like tons of it. And I can give it over to April, my sister-in-law, who does graphic design stuff for me and generates a bunch of images. I've gotten her using AI a ton, and now I can just give her access to my machine. And my battery stays at like 98% the whole time, because I never have like a heavy computational load unless I specifically need to on my machine. And it's like a perfect microcosm of, like, imagine, like, I'm doing that right now for my Mac, but imagine that on mobile. You know, what degree of language model can you utilize when it doesn't take any of your battery to do it? And it's really exciting. I'm really curious about, what are your thoughts? So you've been working with Hole Punch now for how long? When did you start this whole project? And when did you kind of be introduced to the Hole Punch specifically, and then start building with it?
I was actually introduced with it over 2 years ago when my friend was working on this tech. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Actually, he's still working with it when my friend started working on the stack.
Nice.
But I have been developing wholesale for like 2 to 3 months. It hasn't been a lot of time, but mm-hmm. still early in development. But I think it will be great once it finally comes out as a stable GUI.
Yeah.
And the terminal app is now better too, and getting better every day at doing things.
Yeah, for sure. What's your vision with where peer-to-peer is going? Like, what's your take on kind of the state of the internet? You know, the internet started out as this kind of utopian dream of, you know, we're going to decentralize communication. You know, everything's going to be an open kind of like market square of ideas. And largely, that's gone away. You know, we trended heavily away from that very quickly with the birth of social media, basically. What are kind of your thoughts on it? And is this what makes you an optimist? Are you an optimist about it? Like, how big is your vision about what you can do with this thing? And kind of what's your long-term position on, I mean, you know, is wholesale something that you're trying to flesh out into something massive, or do you have like a bunch of different projects in mind? Like, kind of what's your take on that?
My take on that is internet becoming centralized, and we not able to establish peer-to-peer connection directly without tools like this. There are two main reasons. First one is that IPv4 is limited, so routers assign us local IPs. Second one being the security I told you about. There are so many bots are trying to attack all the services on the internet all the time.
Yeah.
So to the common user out there, these two issues are really something that stops them from connecting peer-to-peer. Okay. So when these problems are solved, common people, those are people who are not so much into understanding or working with the tech, they can start using peer-to-peer. How? For example, there are a lot of applications that absolutely do not need servers. For example, I'm doing a call to you. do we need servers in Bitcoin?
No.
We actually do not. Yeah. For example, Keith.
We're forced to use one.
We are forced to use one. But yeah, I am doing a VoIP call. Do I need a server? No. I'm sending you files. Maybe if you need to store the files, we need a server like Google Drive or whatever. But if I just want to drag and drop files on a different computer, even miles away, there shouldn't be a need of the server. I can just pick up from here and then send it there. I want to play local games. Like I have a friend group, I want to play games with them. So I need to create a server and then pay for the server, maintain the server, and then deal with the uptime of the server and how lag it is because either I'm not paying them enough or the quality is not good. And after that, all the friends connecting and then we are playing. Instead, I can just start a LAN world on my local. That is for Minecraft, but this goes all the way for anything that you can play on LAN. So you open your LAN on wholesale and anyone using the service can connect to you and play with you. Now there is a client. Okay, there is a client who you are developing website for. For your friend who is learning web development, they are having some sort of issue. Now a lot of time, the exact issue they are facing, you might not see them. So Chrome has a built-in feature called debugger, right? You can actually expose the debugger to the network. That way, you can see their website live, what they are seeing. You can control the debugger within their Chrome. Exactly see the website they are seeing, make changes, and fix this. I think this is a great solution for the developers. So they don't need to say, hey, it works on my side. No, they will be just like, okay, boot up wholesale and give me access to your website, just that specific website. When I have access, I will see what's wrong on your side. I won't need to install their browser. I won't need to be on their computer or take screenshots from their service. They can just expose that one a specific website to me. Yeah. And I will be able to say it like they're sharing their screen. But they're actually not sharing their screen. It's just Chrome debugging tools running on the local server. But they are being shared with me. So there are many such examples. These are just few examples I gave you where we are forced to use the servers. But the services like these and their processes where we don't need to servers, we can actually eliminate the servers. We can eliminate the cost and move forward with peer-to-peer. So my vision is making all of these true. I am actually going all in. I don't have a bunch of projects. Yeah. Wholesale is my main project right now and my goal is to remove centralized servers from where they can be removed. I think servers are still going to be there. I'm not all that peer-to-peer is the only future. No, peer-to-peer is a better future alongside of our current servers. I want to send you a file. I'll just drag from here, drop to you. We are connected through a key. I send you a file, you get your file. As simple as that.
Yeah.
Nothing in middle, just you and me talking.
Yeah.
And that's
awesome. You know, I think that's a really important thing to talk about too, is the fact that it does not mean that we're switching everything over to peer-to-peer, that it doesn't remove where servers actually make sense, you know, where servers are actually useful, but it removes the need to depend on them where servers end up becoming an authority when they should not be. It removes the reliance on servers. And because there's so many things that we do that would be phenomenally better if we could do them peer-to-peer and are actually a big drawback from a server perspective. And not only that, they have incredible overhead. That's another like really beautiful thing about the entire hole punch, the Pear Stack ecosystem. And like the wholesale thing is that when I run wholesale, like the beauty of peer-to-peer is that you're not having to run a service to establish my connection. So if like there was no obligation on your end, there was no reliability or anything that you had to deal with to make wholesale work for me and my machines. And in that same way, I actually, this might even be an episode of the show. I'm not sure because it's such a cool thing. Maybe it'll just be like a little short video when we figure it out. But I was talking, have you ever, I don't even think I asked this. are you deep into Bitcoin as well? And did you find Bitcoin before? Or is Bitcoin just kind of like tangential to the whole peer-to-peer stuff?
Okay. What I will say is, I think I am the most general user of Bitcoin. I have used it for trading, but the main reason why I have used Bitcoin is for transmitting money from one place to another. I had a client who I was developing a website for. Mm-hmm. At the time, I did not have a way to get international payment. And they paid me through Bitcoin. That was the first time I used Bitcoin. And I think that is still the most important use case, that you can just send money to anyone through Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah.
That's trading and all that peer-to-peer is there. But the main use case is that you can send money to anyone. How cool it is. Anyone, anywhere, the way money is meant to be.
Yeah, hell yeah. On that, the reason I asked is because there's a game called Hodl Up, and it's arguably a game to teach you how Bitcoin works. But it's funny, when you're playing it, it's not really in that context, because there's a really fantastic player dynamic. And I have to give kudos to Scott Lindberg is the creator of it. That it's very, very difficult in my experience in thinking about stuff to both teach someone with a game, but then also have it be engaging and not be more difficult to learn the game than it is to play it. You know what I mean? Like being accurate in a game and fun at the same time is a complicated process, but he does it phenomenally well. And it's a really fun dynamic. But immediately we were talking about it after we played a game, and I kind of got into it for the first time and I won, which I was very excited about. I was talking to him about it afterward, and he was saying the game costs quite a bit to make. It's high quality materials and like really good solid like metal coins and that sort of thing. So it's not a cheap game to put together. And then on top of that, he's like, if we wanted to ship worldwide and we wanted to do this in a bunch of different languages, like there's just the cost just keeps going up. And so he wanted to make an app. He wanted to make a software version of the game. And so he's like, you know, we could host a website or something like that. Like we're trying to figure out how to do that. And he had seen my Devs Who Can't Code series on AI Unchained. And he was like, you know, I'm wondering to what degree, like, I feel like it's obvious we would need to hire a developer, but to what degree we could build a proof of concept purely with AI? Like, is that even feasible? And so, like, we were just kind of talking about the dynamics of that. And then it immediately struck me while we were having this conversation, I was like, oh my God, this is the perfect example of a peer-to-peer game, of a game that works beautifully in that context. If you can get this sort of thing running on mobile, because there's no reason for them to have infrastructure cost. There's no reason for them to need to host a server. Like, the games are isolated to the players. It's a board game, right? Like, you don't need a Monopoly server in order to play Monopoly on your kitchen table. And immediately, like, we started going, I had to leave at that point. So we only got to talk about it for like 5 or 10 minutes. And he had never heard of this. He's like, PearStack? Hole Punch? What are you talking about? It's something we will be revisiting for sure. I've got a pin in it to get back to him in a conversation that we have on Telegram. And I'll probably use Keat or Wholesale as kind of like a first example to just show him what we can do with it. But it's just really exciting because it opens up the ability to make a new game and a really fun and kind of elegant looking game. Like, it's got a really good aesthetic. The branding and everything on the game is like just solid. He does a good job. And to really show off the capacity, the extreme benefit and complete lack of cost for a hole punch based game, to be able to play something truly peer to peer with a small group of friends. And then even, I mean, God knows, you could let people gamble on it. Like, you could put $5 worth of sats on the table, put 10,000 sats on the table and play the game and, you know, see who wins. And you could start to do these things peer to peer in a little your own little environment. And just, again, just what you can do with this is just so cool. Like when you just solve a fundamental, when you solve a problem low enough in the stack, you know, in the connection stack, the possibilities just become endless very, very quickly. And I'm curious, I might talk to you about this when we're kind of putting together logistics. But I would love to get your feedback and opinion on what the best route to go would be, you know, to get that to work. But just know that that's something on the radar. And I think it would be a great way to showcase what you can do with peer-to-peer gaming that won't just kind of be like a, we invented a game for the hell of a game, for the sake of a game. Like it's a good thing on in and of itself. And it just allows him to distribute it with the least possible cost. So we'll probably talk about that. We'll keep the key room open.
Yeah. Actually there's a plugin called, let me see what it's called. It's called Hole Puncher. It's made for Godot Engine 3. Engine 3. Godot is a engine for building games. And Hole Puncher allows you to use hole punch system in Godot 3. I think that will be really cool and helpful in building what you are building. For the mobile version, I cannot say anything about that yet because I think the team is still working on a lot of mobile modules.
Mm-hmm.
So mobile is not yet that stable.
Okay. Okay, gotcha.
I mean, Kit works, but Kit is limited only to few functionality.
Yeah.
But to get other things to function.
Yeah.
This is the Swan Bitcoin app, and this is how easy it is to just buy Bitcoin whenever you're feeling like it. And I feel like it right now. And as it shows me right here, I still have $9,388 worth of my $10,000 of Bitcoin buying that has no fees whatsoever. And now I have $10 more worth of Bitcoin. I do this quite often. One of the really great things about Swan is the incredible number of resources they have for learning and understanding anything that you want to know about Bitcoin. And importantly, they're going to teach you why you should not trade. They're not going to encourage you to trade. They are Bitcoin only. If you're looking for an easy and reliable way to get into Bitcoin, if you're looking to put Bitcoin in your IRA, if you're looking to put Bitcoin in your business, if you're looking to do anything around getting on a Bitcoin standard or getting exposed to Bitcoin in your portfolio, check out swanbitcoin.com/guy is my special link, and you will find it very conveniently right in the show notes.
No, I can see that. And probably the easiest way to bridge that gap before you actually had like a full-fledged game and stuff, because that is a big part of this. And I think a big part of the limitation for the Pear Stack has been for like the last year and a half, is the fact that we're essentially waiting on one dev team to build out all the tools necessary to get it to this working position. And it's funny, I talked to Mathintosh about like getting a protocol spec and stuff. Like I asked, you know, is that going to come out so that people can basically build their own client to communicate with this, you know, be in consensus? And he said, yes, but it won't be for a little bit. And the reason is because they had version 9, of which I think we're on like version 10, moving into version 11 of this whole Pear stack thing. And he said version 9, they thought they finally had like the thing that was going to work. And they spent like 8 months or something like that building a like writing a protocol spec. And then in the process of doing that, when they were almost done with it, they figured out a way that was essentially like a 10x in version 10. They figured out a way to do something that was just so much better than the way they had previously done it. And it broke everything about their protocol spec. And so they were like redesigning it again. He says, listen, I'm just not going to shoot myself in the foot and do all that work again until I know we're done. He says, but this time they think they won't really have any breaking changes. They've got a couple that they know are planned. But that as long as everybody's running on Pear runtime for now, that won't be a problem because it'll just update as things go. But they're very, very close finally to that stage. And I think that will change things quite a bit and the ecosystem around it and the development around it. Just because it means that the access and the ability to build your own tools that, or a client that's even like just a piece of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not even the whole thing. It just, right. But it's able to be in consensus and be compatible with the protocol. That's going to make it very, very interesting. That's why I think this stuff can start to steamroll really, really quickly. Next 2 years is going to be really interesting. I'm curious, what are you watching for most? What do you want as a tool that you can't build or you're hoping somebody else will build?
My main issue was compiling the app to run on the desktop, but actually I managed to solve it. And you can turn your peer apps. Yeah, one more thing. I think they haven't mentioned it in the documentation yet. But when you are building peer apps, you can also compile them to be run as a separate desktop app. So basically, there is a wrapper around it. You can distribute the desktop app to people who do not have the terminal, people who do not want to open the terminal or do not know how to use it. They open the app and it runs like the normal peer. It auto updates and everything. Okay. So that was my main issue, and they actually solved it. Apart from that, the issue is the mobile development. And they say they are working on it, the net module, which allows you to use net library from Node.js with peer.
Sweet.
And bear. So that will solve my issues with mobile. Yeah, that will be really cool. When it gets to the stage that it works on mobile, I think it will be really great.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. I agree. All right, I think we hit the bulk of the stuff I wanted to cover. I'm curious, do you have any other thoughts or anything that you specifically wanted to dig into here? I'll leave the table open for you. Like, what do you think for the audience? What do you think they should be looking out for, or how should they be thinking about what is specifically good for peer-to-peer versus is going to be too difficult and still probably need servers for the immediate future? You know, like, what's the way to think about going into this thing and thinking about using it so that we can get to this future faster, I guess, is probably the way to frame it.
I would say servers for file storage are still needed. I mean, Keet distributes your files to people. Mm-hmm. But I personally have had issues accessing those files, waiting for the files. So the file systems are still going to stay on the servers out there. And huge systems like WhatsApp and all that still rely on the huge infrastructure. In starting, I mentioned that there are two restrictions, the limited IPv4 and the security restrictions. Because of those restrictions, there are services that actually do not make any sense to use server with are still using servers. So from those services, we can take out the server part and put them peer-to-peer. For example, the example of the game you shared, the board game, local games, Minecraft servers, they can be all peer-to-peer based.
Yeah.
And yeah, peer-to-peer coding. So there's on my computer, on my desktop computer, I run a huge AI model. And in my VS Code or whatever code editor I'm using, I use a plugin which pairs with my computer, which is running the huge AI model. And then I get code suggestions directly through there while I'm typing the code.
Yeah.
It corrects my grammar and everything.
That's so cool.
There's that. Anything that does not require a server.
God, that's so cool. So not require a server. Like a live code thing. I didn't even think about that I haven't used that yet. And that's actually something that I don't think we've mentioned about wholesale, is that you can do the local services, but you can also directly share from VS Code. Which is funny because that's what Hope and I are actually using with the devs who can't code, which means that if you're building an application with AI in VS Code, you can also directly serve that application inside of VS Code to another device to then use it and test it remotely without doing anything. Like, you don't have to compile it, build it. Like, that's fucking crazy. That's fucking crazy. That's so awesome. I absolutely love it. But it's funny that you bring up file storage, because that was from the context of a few different things that I was trying, projects I was trying to build early and funding. And I admit that like a lot of the reasons that they didn't execute, so to speak, was my fault. It was in how I was setting up our arrangement. I was just finding people who were excited about it. And then we weren't. And I think it's just because everybody's like a little bit nervous to talk about money, you know, like it's everybody's just trying to help out and be like, yeah, we'll sort it out later. Let's go ahead and start building on a thing. And so like we didn't really have like a concrete contract or arrangement. And so we would work together. I would send sats and we would, you know, like we were just kind of like over time, just kind of like start putting pieces together. But the when the initial excitement died down, it would just kind of get put on the back burner for everybody. And so that was really on me, is not having like a concrete, like we're going to pay, I will pay this much, you know, and we will do this, this and this. And so like without like a hard schedule, things just kind of fell by the wayside. But I have, learned from that. I've learned that lesson. And, what ended up settling on, we ended up settling on that. I was just like, this problem has to be solved, is the file problem. Like Heat has been amazing, for that, despite the headaches, especially, trying to get to, file generally to a room, especially when you're saving it from mobile, because they don't have the blind forwarding cache for media yet. But I can tell it's already going to be massively better as they start to roll this stuff out. It's funny, even with Keith's limitations, I was still using it for file transfer between my devices, because it was the easiest thing. But that is specifically what we have built Pear Drive for. And we're getting very close to a usable implementation of it. And this might be something very, very good for me to talk to you about, to get feedback, because I would love it to be the easiest way for you to use it. You know what I mean? Like to be able to have Pear Drive serve you and what you need to do with getting files from device to device to device, and to partner with wholesale in such a way that you just have like this easy streaming of connections, services, files, anything that we need to build this stuff out. But that was my immediate reaction too when I started diving into all this stuff, is that like what we could really change, like we could disrupt BitTorrent in the sense that if we can build a better peer-to-peer experience for file sharing. And I don't even mean that in the sense it's like, oh, we're going to share movies and we're going to pirate stuff. I mean it just purely, if we can build a better peer-to-peer experience for file sharing, then we can obsolete the previous peer-to-peer ecosystem by just being better in every way, and then start to compete really with centralized services by tackling the easy direct things first, and then kind of building out in iterative building from there, until we just have like a complete, just a file, a solution to files, to distribution and viewing of files. And man, that's going to be wild, because I really think there's a powerful solution there. And especially with the cost of bandwidth these days, like when you're looking at like a centralized server, cost of bandwidth on AWS, or, you know, buying a server somewhere, it's ridiculous. It's insane. You know, actually, on that note, what's been your biggest problems with and or plans with wholesale distribution, like actually distributing the software? How many users do you have? What's the kind of, I guess it's a really small application, so it's probably not big. It's probably not a big problem yet. But you host it. Did I download it off of GitHub, or did I download it from your website?
You downloaded it off GitHub,
okay.
I believe.
Okay, gotcha. But in that sense, like, what's your level of distribution risk? Like, if you had like a million people right now, does GitHub have any problem with that? I mean, aside the fact that you're using a centralized service, but what's the relevant costs there for you in just like distributing this thing if you don't have, if you're not using Pair Runtime yet?
The distribution costs are not actually that much. You basically upload a file and they download it off you. And the website we are running is static. And the software right now is on NPM. So basically when you install from the Node Package Manager, that is all free. However, as we grow, the bandwidth might be an issue. But if we use Pair, the distribution becomes easy. The file you need to share just one time. And after that, it is all peer-to-peer. The updates are peer-to-peer. It automatically updates as soon as you stage all the changes. So that's kind of cool.
Gotcha. I figured it probably wasn't much, but I was curious if there were, if you were running into anything yet or like what kind of limitations there were, because I've never actually distributed anything to any great degree. You know, if I've ever shared anything, it was with a small group of people. But I fully recognize that a distributed GitHub would be a huge point just because of the centralizing. Like when GitHub gets to the point where they see themselves as an authority rather than, you know, it's the inevitable thing of centralized platforms is the bigger they get and the more powerful the network effect, the more likely they see themselves as an authority rather than a service. And the creeping, we can censor just a little bit, we should remove this project because this one's unfriendly or offensive or whatever the hell it is. And to some degree, there is, it's inevitable for the conversation to go that way. But the bigger and more centralized they are, the more that becomes a matter of preference rather than a matter of security. And then it inevitably gets enveloped in politics. And I always worry, I don't worry, actually. Like part of me does, but part of me thinks like this would actually be a great stress test against the peer-to-peer ecosystem, is that at some point, if it's pissing off enough people that there's a decentralized alternative that's disrupting centralized platforms, that the platforms will quote-unquote retaliate. And it'll be really interesting. I feel like it will be after the point where we have our own distribution mechanism, you know? I mean, right now, Pair Runtime is basically that. It's just not got the network effect or the recognizability, maybe is the word I'm looking for. But it's pretty, right. It's pretty incredible, though, to see where things are going to go and to think that we already have the tools being built and ready and waiting for when the shit does hit the fan. Like, it's rare to actually be prepared ahead of time, and it's exciting to see the momentum starting to build finally, to people see people like you building stuff with it, and to know that it was actually before Pair Runtime, that, you know, you've been building with it for a while and that people have been discovering this thing and building the solutions that I've been looking for a really, really long time. And I hope to contribute my little piece of it if I can. And I would love to work with you in the future.
That would be amazing. About the Git funds, I was actually thinking about that too. And what I came up with, you can self-host Git.
Oh, I guess you can you?
Yeah, you can self-host Git. Now, what changes things is, basically, just like on Tor, we have Onion search engines. What they do is they index Onion websites, the websites hosted peer-to-peer, the Onion websites. Mm-hmm. Just like that, we can have a search engine for the keys. A search engine which lists hole punch keys, hole cell keys. That way we can build not just a peer-to-peer internet connection, but also similarly for a GitHub, basically a peer-to-peer GitHub, where all the Git servers are local, but the data that is going off from them, you are downloading the projects that are indexed at the end are coming from a decentralized index.
From the swarm. Yeah. God, that's awesome.
Yeah, from the network. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Git is self-hostable. I have a project, you have a project on Git, and we both of our keys get indexed by a search engine which indexes all cell keys. Now, anyone who searches for our project can find it through there and download it from our local Git server. So it cannot be destroyed.
That's so cool. That's so crazy. That's a simpler way to actually put the pieces together than I had suspected. But
yeah.
You're right. You totally could do that just with an index.
Right. Like Pirateway. Pirateway doesn't really host torrent files. Those are just torrent, what do we call it? The magnet links.
Yeah, just the magnet links.
They're not hosting the files themselves. They are just an index for the torrents. Yeah. So there can be an index for Git. There can be an index for the website. So that's, I think, really cool.
That's so cool. Man, this is exciting. I'm so happy. I'm so happy. I literally, you know, there's part of me, it's like I think about it from, I don't know what you know about the history of Bitcoin, like the prehistory of Bitcoin. It basically, after like 20 years of people trying to build peer-to-peer money, most of the people on the cryptography mailing list and the cypherpunk mailing list were becoming increasingly just skeptical that it was ever going to work and that there was a real solution to it. And so the typical response to projects when they landed or when somebody announced a new thing that solved the problem was, yeah, this is not going to work. It was basically defeatist attitudes. And it was funny that Hal Finney was ever the optimist. He was always like, just like knew that there was some way that it was going to happen and it was just going to take a while. And he was the only one that would just embrace every new idea honestly or openly, I guess. And it's not that that's not true that like everybody was, you know, a nihilist at that point, but there was a lot of PTSD from multiple failed projects that had a lot of hope. And it's funny, I feel like probably my view of the peer-to-peer space is probably similar because I've just watched everything get worse and worse from a platform perspective. And I've cared so deeply about this and thought this was such a potent thing back from when peer-to-peer was the dominant bandwidth on the internet, right? 2006, 2007, it was something like 70%, 80% of the traffic during those years was literally a series of peer-to-peer protocols. Like it was more direct communication. And then it was like, as soon as social media hit, it branched out and it started to decline. And now it's like tiny. Even comparing all the peer-to-peer protocols, there's just a very, very small amount of bandwidth dedicated to that now. And you can kind of see that we're the glory days of BitTorrent, news groups, like, you know, all of these things, these previous more peer-to-peer, more direct communication. I mean, even Skype was that for a long time. Like it was literally peer-to-peer communication. Right. Then they stuck a server in the middle of it and did away with it all. And I feel like finally it's coming back. You know, like we have a chance to kind of swing back in the other direction. It's like, you know, two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. And that we've completed our one step back and starting to finally build the foundation for another two steps forward. And, you know, I just want to say thanks. Thanks for being interested in this stuff and being able to build this stuff so I can use wholesale rather than think how great it would be to have a tool like that, that I can actually have it. So it's cool to see people finally embracing the ecosystem and the tools and making it work for everybody. So if I can support, if I can help, if I can get the word out there, let me know. I am very eager to participate and help make it better if I can.
Yeah, that would be great. We are still growing and there are not many users who still know about wholesale, but I think with the medium of our chat here and Twitter and platforms like LinkedIn, people will get to know it. And it's not just about the tech sales people. It's also for common developers, the newbies starting out there. It's for gamers. It's for just someone wanting to access their camera from anywhere. So it's a tool that everyone should be using and the entire stack. I think, to put it in a way, I'll call hole punches actually the build box of peer-to-peer community and the stores. A few years ago, there's this really cool gaming engine called Buildbox, but they charge insanely huge amounts per year so that you can build games with it. However, 2 years ago or something like that, they changed their plan and made it incredibly cheap. And at that time, companies picked up the tool and they built hyper-realistic games with it so much. It's like flooded the Play Store in like 2 months of its release. I still remember wanting to purchase it and work with it. And then they made it really cheap. Companies like Voodoo, it was everywhere. So I think as the platform grows, the hole punch stack will be everywhere. There will be many apps built on it, peer-to-peer apps. Servers were not necessary, are just added cost. That doesn't make any sense. So hole punch will take that out. Wholesale will take that out. And that will be really great. You don't have to maintain, you don't have to pay for the servers. It's not necessary.
Yeah. So,
and you can basically connect locally. So that's pretty cool. You can do a lot of stuff with this stuff.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. That is awesome, man.
And I'm grateful for the people behind Hole Punch.
Yeah, for sure. Shout out to them always. Always deserve a shout out. Yeah. They've been putting an enormous amount of work into making all of this a reality. Saran, dude, thank you so much for coming on the show for our second episode of the Pair Report. Thank you for building Wholesale. And how can people follow you, check out the project, stay up to date on what you're doing? Give me the rundown for the audience.
They can visit our website. You can visit our website, wholesale.io, to check the product. And there's a button to subscribe to our mailing list where every week or every month, I push out our updates on what we are doing. You can follow us on LinkedIn or star us on GitHub. And we also have a Twitter account with the same name, wholesale.io.
Also, I am. All right.
And we also have a Discord server.
Perfect. Perfect. I will have the links to all of that if I can get every one of them. If there are any of the links that you want to send to me or anything, let me know. And I will have them all in the description of this show. So anybody who was looking for that stuff wants to follow them. I was very honored to be like the first or second follower on Twitter because they just set up the account. So I will share that out. And yeah, definitely, dude. Thank you so much again for coming on. I'll send everybody those links and I will stay up to date. Stay in communique with me. Hit me up with any messages and we will continue to talk as this unfolds.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a really good chat and insightful one.
Hell yeah, man. I appreciate it. Yeah. I have something really, really crazy to share with you guys. If you want to use Wholesale, the link and the details are going to be right in the description of this podcast. I'm being completely serious. It's literally just going to be like right down here. Like if you scroll down on your phone or whatever device it is that you're listening to this on, you're going to see the details of this podcast episode. And right there, you will see the link to go check this out. And this is free and open source software, and nobody's charging for this. There's not going to be any advertisements. You're just going to go to it, and then you can use Wholesale to connect your home desktop to your laptop. You can share services. You could share a website. Any service that you want to run with localhost can now be run over Pair. Can now be run remotely. I don't know. Maybe you should check it out and follow Super Sue. I'll have socials and obviously check out Keat. Jump into the Pair development room if you want to talk to a whole bunch of people who are building on this as well. That's basically where I found all of my conversations and the projects and stuff that are happening on it. And I think this is some really exciting stuff, specifically because I look for tools like this. Like I look for stuff that solves these problems, and every single thing is complicated. Everything is generally requires some sort of elaborate setup. And with wholesale, I just make a key on the device that's hosting, and then I punch it into my other device. And then we're running. We're off and running. Couple of layers of abstraction and making those commands go away with the desktop app. I haven't got to use it yet. It might, like I said, it might be out. But you could literally make this a one-click scan a QR code app. And that, I think, is how easy it should be to connect two devices. It just should. So anyway, check it out. I'm really excited, and I'll be keeping up with this, and we will be covering lots more on this show. Do not forget to subscribe, because I know there are so many other projects on the way. We have our own project on the way, which I am very excited to be announcing, hopefully, you know, sooner rather than later, but lots of fun stuff. But with that, we will close out the second episode of the Pair Report. Don't forget to subscribe if you want to follow our journey into the self-hosted peer-to-peer future, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Pair Report. I'm Guy Swan, and until then, everybody, take it easy, guys.